From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on August 6th in Rochester when the New York State Public Service Commission will host a public hearing regarding proposed rate increases for RG&E and NYSEG. Both companies are part of Avangrid, and they are requesting permission to raise rates for customers in New York State starting in May of 2020. In a letter to the state, the local utilities asked for a 5.4% increase if you're an RG&E electric customer, a 4% increase for RG&E natural gas customers. For NYSEG electricity customers, utilities want to raise rates 23.7%. The utilities say their request achieves an essential balance between the need for investments in electric and gas infrastructure with the important objective of maintaining customer rates that are affordable and among the lowest in New York State. And a spokesman for the PSC said the commission's number one priority is going to be to ensure all New Yorkers have access to safe, affordable, reliable, and clean energy services. He said the PSC will rigorously assess the proposed rates to ensure they are fair and reasonable. He says that over 11 months, the public review process will closely review the initial request. Does it sound fair to you? If you're a customer of RG&E or NYSEG, does it work? Well, there's going to be public hearings, they'll take public comment, and a wide range of stakeholders are already weighing in. This is about what we pay for energy. Yeah, it's about your monthly bills. It's also about climate change. It's about innovation. It's about what we prioritize. And our guests this hour have a lot to say about that. Let's welcome our guests in studio. Kristen Van Harwagee is a member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Kristen, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And also with us is Scott Oliver, Deputy for Energy Programs for the Pathstone Corporation. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Good to see you.
We're hoping to hear from Richard Berkeley this hour, the Executive Director of the Public Utility Law Project of New York. And as soon as we have him on the line, we'll go ahead and work that in. And we invited RG&E, of course, and just want to mention some of what they had to say, because RG&E, essentially, the company is deferring only to their CEO to speak publicly about this issue, which I confess caught me a little off guard. The CEO is not in town right now, which is, we understand, so unavailable to join the program today. I suspect that there were a lot of people who could talk about this issue. I'm sure they've been working on it for a long time, but they are deferring to their CEO, and so they did send us a statement in lieu of joining us on the program, and I'll go ahead and read some of that now. From RG&E, they're talking about a sustainable energy future, and they wrote to us the following. Innovation requires investment. And that's precisely why we filed for a regulatory rate review. As part of the rate case, we've submitted proposals to expand the electric vehicle charging infrastructure across our service areas. We've also proposed three electric vehicle projects, EV projects, as well as a consumer education program to increase awareness of EVs as an alternative to internal combustion engine vehicles. Our organization believes that energy storage can provide benefits to the electric system and our customers by enabling renewable resources, supporting the distribution system, and helping New York meet its emissions targets. As such, we've proposed the development of four energy storage projects, providing approximately 12 MWs of capacity. I think that's megawatts. Yeah, I think. Thank you, Scott. Of capacity for load relief and up to 105 megawatts of available energy. Leveraging transformational technology is a critical component for a secure energy future, end quote. And let me also read from RG&E's statement to WXXI, quote, last month we announced an expansion of an existing partnership with Nissan North America to provide 3.2 million customers and employees across New York, New England, and Oregon with a $5,000 discount on the purchase of a Nissan Leaf electric vehicle. We increased our EV fleet by 75%. We've proposed a $29 million investment earmarked for the expansion of EV charging infrastructure across the state. And RG's parent company, Avangrid, is one of the cleanest U.S. energy companies and a leader in renewable energy. In 2016, we pledged to reduce emissions intensity from our power plants by 25% by 2020 and to be 100% carbon neutral by 2035. Making Avangrid the first U.S. utility to set a goal for carbon neutrality. They talk about smart meters, and they conclude with this. Ultimately, our goal for the rate review is simple, to secure the necessary resources to best serve our customers. We're very proud of the fact that RG&E and NYSEG customers enjoy the lowest electric delivery rates in the state and among the lowest gas delivery rates. If our proposal is approved, that will still be the case. We're making significant investments in New York because we live and work here, too. End quote. That's from RG&E. Kristen Van Harwagee from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Does that work for you?
Well, Evan, we do want to applaud RG&E on their efforts to include initiatives for EV charging stations, and they've also done a good job in their proposals to work towards electrifying our public transit bus fleets. And so we applaud those efforts and ask them actually to continue doing that. In fact, for the electrical vehicle charging stations, we think that is a good start, but would like to see that more aggressively funded and more widespread across our communities. But in addition to electric vehicle charging stations, we're really trying to approach this from a systemic perspective and looking at larger changes to our energy infrastructure and our and the types of energy that we use. So I find it interesting, actually, that they singled out electric vehicles in their statements.
Pretty heavily, yeah.
Yeah, and that really sort of shows their focus more on sort of individual behaviors, which while are important, you know, we have to see how those connect to our larger systems and our energy infrastructure.
You're looking for systemic change. You see a lot of lip service to individual options as opposed to systemic change in that statement. Fair?
Correct.
You oppose the rate increase?
I do oppose the rate increase, personally. I do agree with their statement, however, that innovation does require investment.
Sure.
However, I think it's about how is it that they're spending our dollars already and why that requires, you know, additional rate increases. So, for example, they're asking for an increase on their guaranteed rate of return of 9%. They're asking for that to increase to 9.5%, which, you know, while asking for a rate increase as well, right? And so rather than seeing sort of increases in rates of return and increases in the rates that people are paying, we'd like to see them shift how they're currently spending their, you know, their spending priorities towards green infrastructure and some of these more environmentally friendly possibilities, solutions.
We'll talk in a moment about what the governor had to say last week about energy systems in New York State in general, because I think it's important to remember what the governor is saying right now about the kinds of energy we're using, about fossil fuels, and about what the future looks like. We'll get to that in a moment. I want to turn to Scott Oliver, Deputy for Energy Programs for the Pathstone Corporation. What's your role here? What's Pathstone's role?
Well, Pathstone, we're advocating for the low to moderate income families in upstate New York. We've done outreach for energy efficiency in the Finger Lakes region for the past 8 years, and we own a lot of property where we affordable housing. So we really want to make sure that we do justice to those low-income, hardworking families. I think it's important to note here that this rate increase is not for the actual utility cost, but it's for the monthly surcharge, like that monthly charge that RG&E charges us every month for the pleasure of having a utility, you know, a meter in our house. So it's different from like the actual amount that you pay for a therm of gas or a kilowatt of electricity. It's like the surcharge that we have to pay. You know, that right now it's $16 a month just for the pleasure of having a gas meter.
So, wait, are you talking about the fixed charge?
Yeah.
RG&E's fixed charge is $21.38, which is the highest in the state.
Okay. Yep. And so I take it, Scott, you haven't said one way or another if you oppose or if Pathstone opposes this rate increase.
Well, I think from Pathstone's point of view is that we need to make sure that the energy efficiency programs in this are up to snuff and helping families out. From what I've read so far, there's a lot lacking in what RG&E and NYSEG are proposing for our energy efficiency programs in the area.
Let me bring in Richard Berkeley, who's on the line with us, the executive director of the Public Utility Law Project of New York. Richard, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. My pleasure to be on with you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Public Utility Law Project of New York is, first of all, Richard?
Sure. We're a 40-year-old not-for-profit public interest law firm. We have a unique mission in New York. We advocate on behalf of low and fixed income energy and other utility services consumers. So we've been around since the oil embargo and the oil shock of the late 1970s, and we were specifically formed back then to fight against increases in the cost of energy in the state of New York. Over that 40-year period, we've also gotten very deeply involved into water cases and telephone, cable, and all sorts of telecom and all that kind of stuff, but still our bread and butter work and the focus of our mission is to advocate on behalf of low-income families and other folks in New York who can't afford the utility bills.
Tell us what you see with this rate case and what they are proposing, what it means for customers, and where you stand on it right now, Richard?
Sure. I think if you look at the rate case itself, there are a couple of things that are the main drivers of increases in the rate case. One of them is that they need to spend a whole lot of money on what utilities call their vegetation management programs. And if you, like many other people in the NYSEG RG&E territory, were paying attention, you notice that in the back-to-back Northeasters, they had a terrible amount of trouble trying to restore electric service in the service territory. And in part, that was because of a lack of full attention, one might say, to managing what utilities call danger trees, but in general, keeping the rights of way clear so that trees are not falling down in rainstorms or windstorms and knocking out power and then making it difficult, if not impossible, to restore areas for a long period of time. That's one big thing. Another thing that's driving cost in the rate case is emergency preparedness. And again, I think for both of these things, while one might argue that the company should have spent this money a long time ago, and that will be part of the discussion in the rate case, it's hard to argue against the company spending on reliability and on the ability to restore and plan for emergencies, particularly when it's shown that this is an area of weakness for them. So those are two of the big drivers in the case. On top of that, there will be a good deal of spending on what's called advanced metering, otherwise known as smart meters. And we've opposed the smart meter plan that the company has since it was first announced. And we still oppose it generally because we believe that there hasn't been a solid case for the deployment of smart meters by any of the upstate utilities. We were able to delay the imposition of a more than $1 billion cost in National Grid, that is Niagara Mohawk, last rate case. This rate case also is going to be up close to $1 billion on smart meters, and we don't see a business case that makes sense for the customers. It's easy to see what the company gets out of it, but that's not our concern because we advocate for customers. So those are some areas we're opposing. We obviously oppose the double-digit increase that the company has. And among other things, we'll be working with our colleagues in the case and all of the citizen interveners, and we've been working very hard for the last couple of months to try and make sure that citizens groups will be in the case, because it's better for more non-traditional intervening parties to be in the case, because among other things, the company doesn't usually hear from its customers in a rate case like this. It's just a room full of attorneys and professional staff. It's different when average everyday people come in and say, you know, my Social Security isn't going up, my pension from the military or from teaching isn't going up. Why do you deserve to get all this when I can't afford it? Having those people in the room is really valuable to getting a better outcome. So that's sort of in general what we're seeing in the case so far. I mean, there's more, but I could take up all your time, and that's not nice.
No. Look, there's a couple things I want to just follow up with you briefly, and then we're going to get to our listeners. Ryan in Geneva, Keith in Farmington are on the line with us already. Listeners, if you've got questions about the proposed rate increases from your utilities, from RG&E, from NYSEG, New York State and the Public Service Commission are going to take some time on this, about 11 months, they say, to really investigate, to hold hearings before a decision is made here. But if you want to weigh in, you can call the program. It's toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email connections@WXXI.org. And Richard, when we look at what the utilities want to do here, they're going to the state saying, hey, we'd like to raise the rates by X here and by Y here. Is there a historical guide that tells us that, yes, there will be public hearings, but ultimately this is going to be approved? Or is there an expectation that this is going to go one way or another?
So, yeah, there'll be public statement hearings. And the more pressure that elected officials and that the customers put on the company, the more hearings you'll get. And what you want to try and end up with is a representative areas of the service territory. You don't want only urban hearings. You don't want only rural hearings. You want, you know, as broad an array of hearings so that, you know, the people who live in the district can tell the company and the state what they think. As far as the company getting what it needs, usually what happens is companies come in and they say, we need X, we need Y, this is the impact. And then the rate case, which is, and I'll say this more than once, is the only time that you get real transparency into the way that the company operates. And so I advocate to have these as often as possible. But you know, during this transparent process where interveners can ask the company any question and they have to answer it, is when you figure out whether the company is saying, look, we need to buy 10 trucks now to do X, Y, and Z. But it may be that after some analysis that the interveners say, well, really, you can buy 2 trucks this year, 2 next year, 4 the year after. And that makes a fairly significant difference if you take that model and look at all of the expenses the company is looking for. And it's not a question of necessarily whether what they're asking for is inaccurate. They're asking for what they believe is necessary to run the company safely and to supply the needs of the customers. But, you know, logical minds may differ on stuff like this, and we may find that the professional staff from the state and that the interveners and the business interveners will all look at that and say, you don't need to spend that money now. Some of it is not going to have any value for the ratepayers till years from now. We're going to put that off until the future. And what will happen is that, you know, usually when we go through this process, the ask of the company gets lowered to basically what is necessary now. And you know how it is in your own life. Like, you spend money sometimes you don't need to spend till next year. And it's the same thing with these kind of rate cases, just much, much, much bigger numbers.
Kristen, do we have information about the August 6th event? I don't have it directly in front of me, but what's going on August 6th?
Sure. So on August 6th, there will be 2 sessions, an afternoon session and an evening session, and it'll be in City Council Chambers on 30 Church Street.
Okay.
And the afternoon session, what will happen is RG&E will present a brief overview of their case at 1:30, and then at 2:30, public statements will start. And then in the evening, RG&E will provide their informational session at 6, and public statements will start at 7.
That's on August 6th. If you want to plan for that, to be part of it, I know the Rochester People's Climate Coalition would love to see you there, but they are just one of many. Pathstone's here today. Again, you're just hearing Richard Berkeley from the Public Utility Law Project of New York. There's going to be a lot of feedback. And then the question becomes just how significant is that feedback to lawmakers and the PSC, et cetera. And there are some questions on exactly what we're talking about here. Let me get Keith in Farmington first to clarify something. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, I've got a question for your guest. When you say a rate, is it going to be on the electricity, the delivery, or both? Is it combined? For example, if I'm paying 15 cents for a total kilowatt, 10 cents being delivery charge, 5 cents being for the electricity, is the rate increase on the whole or part?
Guests in studio, want to handle that? Yeah. Scott, Kristen? Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, it's that delivery charge that – so the utility rates, the amount you pay for the actual therm of gas or the kilowatt of electricity are – it's a market rate, so that shifts over the years. But
right.
This is the actual delivery charge that you pay every month. You know, if you look at your bill, that's a fixed rate that we pay every month. And in that is a certain, you know, because RG&E doesn't actually produce the electricity or the gas, they have to make a certain amount of profit. And there's a certain amount of profit put in there. Usually it's 9%, but this year they want a little bit more. So that's what it costs them just to have the wires and the pipes.
Does that help, Keith?
All right, well, my delivery charge runs about 8 cents a kilowatt, so they're asking for a 5% rate increase on an 8 cent per kilowatt delivery charge, which, quick math, is about 4 tenths of a cent.
So it might be like
kilowatt.
$5 a month or something for you. I mean, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Chris, is that right?
RG&E has estimated it as about $3 a month on your electricity and about $2 a month on your gas.
Okay.
For Keith, a certain amount of
all right,
usage.
Appreciate it, Evan.
Yeah, thank you, Keith. I appreciate that, too. And before we get Ryan in Geneva, let me just hit one other important point. So, Ryan, hang there, because I really want to get your perspective. We're hearing from a lot of people, and I'm going to try to work through a lot of feedback already that we're getting, which just tells me that I suspect on August 6th and then beyond, there's going to be a lot of feedback to the Public Service Commission of New York State over this, just understanding the mechanism and what the money is going to be used for. But when it comes to the concerns raised by the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, that this is about the future of innovation, it's about what we're prioritizing in our energy system now. Kristen, briefly, do you see this as New York State, if they approve this, extending the emphasis on fossil fuels at a time when we ought not be doing that? Is that the position of RPCC?
Well, Evan, you know, there's a lot of nuance, obviously, to a rate case, but generally speaking, we do not support any continued investment in gas infrastructure. That's our highest demand, our top priority, especially given the new climate legislation that has been passed in New York State, where, you know, we're being praised as a leader amongst the country in terms of moving towards, you know, lower greenhouse gas emissions, towards net zero in our economy by 2050. I don't see what's being proposed in the rate case as RG&E and NYSEG taking really active steps in leadership in that area and transitioning us away from fossil fuels.
Okay. And so you want to add to that, Scott? Go ahead.
Yeah. There's a big question of something called stranded assets, of like, why is RG&E putting a lot of money, like hundreds of millions of dollars, into maintaining pipelines that we're trying to phase out over the next few years? Why put money into something that you know you're going to get rid of, you know, in a few years from now? You know, like one of the things that RG&E is looking at is having a gas dryer rebate program, which, you know, if we're trying to get people off of natural gas, why are you encouraging people to buy gas dryers?
Along those same lines, they're also doing something similar for natural gas furnaces. And, you know, we've asked them, why are they not incentivizing sort of the transition from natural gas furnaces to clean heating and cooling technologies like heat pumps that run on electricity, which can be generated, you know, using renewable energy.
So I want to listen to what the governor had to say about this last week. This is not specifically about the rate request from RG&E, from Avangrid, from NYSEG. But if you look at the climate bill that just passed, Kristen's right. I mean, it's been hailed, appropriately so, as the most aggressive or at least far-reaching climate action plan out of any state plan in the country. However, the plan that was talked about a few weeks before the end of the session, we go back to early June. You know what the governor was saying? The governor was saying it's not going to pass. It's got no chance. I mean, he's not going to support it. He thought it was unrealistic. Part of what some of those proposals called for, depending on which one you were reading, was a ban on any future fossil fuel projects. Now, the ultimate bill that passed did not include a ban or on the expansion or the creation of new fossil fuel projects in this state. And when the governor was on this program on Friday, I asked him about the criticism he's received from, you know, people like Kristen, people who work for RPCC or are activists, are citizens who are concerned about climate, who say, okay, we did some good things here, but we should have passed a ban on this. And that they feel that this rate case, the rate case from RG&E and NYSEG, is sort of tied to this idea that we haven't gotten over yet, fossil fuels. So I asked the governor, should there have been a ban on fossil fuels in terms of future development, new building, etc., in the state's climate bill? And here's what he said.
It does not block fossil fuel projects. It sets goals for the future. And that's why I said the goals are nice, the actions are better. And our wind turbine project, for example, we have very aggressive solar projects. But you cannot end fossil fuels until you have an alternative, right? You can't stop society. I can't tell you don't start your car because it burns gasoline until we have an alternative that is actually achievable from a market point of view and accessible.
All right, Kristen Ben-Harwaji from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. What do you make of what you just heard from the governor there?
Well, to be honest, Evan, it's a little disappointing. You know, it's not surprising given that we're also seeing this type of approach at the federal level in terms of opening up new areas for drilling. You know, there are some proposals for new coal plants. And so it does seem to be in check, you know, largely with that. You know, I think this is a missed opportunity for Governor Cuomo to demonstrate some real leadership in terms of he says, you know, we can't ask society to stop. Well, we can ask society for some to think differently about what we want our future to look like. And that's not going to happen if we have a governor who's saying things like, this isn't possible, right? We can't do this. We can do this, right? Renewable technology is growing. It's becoming increasingly more affordable. And the more we continue to invest in that sort of renewable technology development, it's going to become more affordable and more accessible. So I think it's a little bit short-sighted, to say the least. And we're really looking, I think, for our leadership to take in the bigger picture and to demonstrate that, that, as we like to say, another world is possible.
Richard Berkley from the Public Utility Law Project of New York, what do you make of what you heard from the governor?
So it's interesting because if you look downstate, and I know we're talking NYSEG RG&E right now, but I'm sure that your listeners and everyone on the phone has heard about the gas moratorium in Westchester County, the gas moratorium in Brooklyn, the gas moratorium in Nassau County, and the spreading gas moratorium through the rest of New York City and out into Suffolk County, too. And those are issues of strong discussion in the Con Edison rate case in Westchester and New York City, and in the National Grid Brooklyn and the National Grid Long Island rate cases. And what I think we're all talking about now is that there is a collision between prior state policy, which was to promote the expansion of natural gas where possible, to transition people off dirtier fuels like diesel, you know, and heating oil, or off of burning of, you know, wood and other kinds of biomass to natural gas, which has less particulate matter and is much cheaper. And so there is a focus on affordability, but also upon transitioning. So, for example, in New York City, the city still pays buildings to switch from heating fuel oil to over to natural gas. And that is only slowly being looked at and addressed by the state as a policy matter, while at the same time it's looking at subsidizing the use of heat pumps and other things to try and lower greenhouse gas impact overall and get higher efficiency. There are a couple problems with transitioning to heat pumps. One of them is that they're much, much more expensive. And so the cost of a heat pump versus a gas furnace is more than double. In Westchester County, what has happened is because of the gas shortage, NYSERDA and Con Edison have stepped forward to give a subsidy to cut the cost of a heat pump in half so that you can now get one for the cost of a new gas furnace. But the electric bill is still higher than natural gas, which is at historic lows in the state of New York. So one of the really tough discussions that all parties are going to have to focus on and come out with a good outcome in this rate case is how do we transition to being responsible about greenhouse gas while at the same time not making it unaffordable for the large numbers of people in the company's territory that are either unable to pay their bills now or having trouble paying them. So we're going to talk about that issue of subsidies of heat pumps and special rates for low-income households on heat pumps. But there are going to be a whole bunch of other solutions that are going to be necessary, too. And I think as far as building new infrastructure, I mean, the point being made around the state, and this is something that for the last year and a half has been a discussion in every rate case and will be a strong discussion in this one because of the nature of the consumers and their interest in a green economy and in, you know, having breathable air and fighting climate change and whatnot. I think there's going to be a long talk about why are we investing in new gas infrastructure if it takes 50 to 75 years to pay it off? Because in 20-some years, we're supposed to be off this stuff entirely. The company hasn't yet said, what if we build something that's only going to be around for 10 years and we get paid back for that bridge to the future? And that discussion is going to happen, and you know, departmental staff from the PSC are going to talk about that issue with all the parties, and the company's going to talk about it, and hopefully we'll come to the right outcome in the case. Okay. And does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Scott, Pathstone, you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, I agree with Richard wholeheartedly on that. But I also, you know, Richard knows that I've been working on the clean heating and cooling campaigns in the Rochester area for the past year and a half. And I've been working with NYSERDA to try to figure out how we do help low to moderate income families adopt heat pump technology. I mean, it's not a simple thing of just, you can't just say, oh, just switch your furnace out for a heat pump. You know, there has to be insulation, air sealing, and making the house a good house. If you have a house that was built in 1915 in the city of Rochester, and you just throw a heat pump in it, it's not going to work. It's like if you took like a Model T and threw a Porsche engine in it, or a Prius engine. Let's you know, you can't just throw a Prius engine in a Model T. It's not going to work. So, you know, we've got to get all the houses up to Prius level. So that's what we're working on right now with NYSERDA. It's not something we could solve today, but, you know, not investing on gas infrastructure that's not going to pay for itself in 70 years is something we really have to look at. We also have to look at the energy efficiency programs of NYSERDA or from RG&E because they're not really putting the money that they say they're going to put into the pockets of residential customers. They're basically taking unspent funds that was supposed to be used in residential customers and giving it to commercial customers. So that's a big problem as far as I can see.
After our only break of the hour, more of your feedback. And we've gotten, we're going to take a phone call from Ryan in Geneva right after the break that I think you're going to want to hear. We have some emails from people who have had some headaches in dealing with RG&E. And I want to be careful because I understand one person's experience may not be the next customer's experience. And RG&E is not on the program today. We did reach out to them. They sent us a statement. Their CEO is the person that the company is deferring to do all of the public speaking about this, who happens to not be in town right now. But they did send us a statement essentially saying they're working on investing in EV programs, education programs, and that they're trying to be efficient, that they're trying to be as low cost as possible, and that the rate increase they are seeking from the New York State Public Service Commission, they think is about driving innovation and a better future for their customers in a lot of different ways here. So that's from RG&E. Let's get that break and get right back to your feedback next. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Ryan in Geneva is next on the phone for us. Go ahead, Ryan.
Thanks, Evan. This is Ryan Wallace. I'm standing in the living room of a net zero home in a net zero development in Geneva, New York. And so I can tell you that, you know, the move away from fossil fuels does work and can be done so economically. And I know that's not news to most of your listeners. But I do find myself often at the confluence of regulation and RG&E and NYSEG bureaucracy. My wife and I built one of the first solar farms in upstate New York, and we're not, you know, some big corporate developer. We're a young couple with young kids who take on a bunch of debt and believe in the future of this and believe that we're building a better future for our kids. And one of the frustrations that I have in all this is not the people involved. You have very earnest, well-meaning people working at NYSEG and RG&E who do live here. The frustration I have is with the administrative rules and minutia that they live within, which is often dictated at a much, much higher corporate level, well away from New York. And, you know, to give you just a brief example of an anecdote, we have customers on our solar farm in Geneva who are now still waiting 6 months later to see credit on their billing. And we call the same nice lady at NYSEG, and she always feels horrible, but they're dealing with incredibly outdated computer technology that's supposed to be managing an incredibly complex and future-looking electrical grid. And so I guess my concern and question all this is, what assurances, if any, do we have that any rate increase aimed towards renewables is going to be matched with administrative competency and attention at NYSEG and RG&E to actually make these hoped-for changes happen?
It's a fair question, Ryan, and I appreciate that. So let me turn it over to all of our guests. I'll start with Richard on that. You want to start, Richard? Go ahead.
Sure, and I think that's a very good question, Ryan, because as everybody upstate knows, the parent company of RG&E NYSEG above Avangrid is a company called Iberdrola. They're a Spanish wind and solar company, and so they should have a very strong fix on renewables. I think one of the things should be a positive for you. If you look, the companies have to file these things called DSIPs, which are distributed services integrated plans. And what they are is an operational plan for how the utility is going to transition towards more renewables. I went to a presentation by the company, I think it was sometime last fall, and they're going to spend a tremendous amount of money on their computer system to make it possible to have more renewables feeding into their grid and to be able to tell people where the best places on their grid are to build that stuff. It's going to cost a lot of money. That's also a big driver in this and future rate cases over the next, you know, 3 to 6 years. But I think that they understand that's a problem, and they're trying to upgrade their old software. I mean, remember, our electric grids in New York are essentially the same technology as we had in 1835. They're not designed to work in two directions, but we're asking them to do all sorts of things that they were never designed to do. And so there's a difficult transition to that. But I think, you know, your involvement in the public comment process at the public hearings and in the case at the PSC is important, and other people who care about renewables, to push the company and to push the departmental staff to focus upon renewables and affordability in this and other cases.
Let me turn to Scott and Kristen in studio. What would you tell Ryan?
Well, I would echo Richard's statements to say definitely come out to the public hearings and share your story. And that's why the public hearings are good, because we get to hear the individual, you know, nuances of everybody's experiences. I'd also say, you know, one of the things we're pushing for, Ryan, is to ask for more consolidated and simplified billing for those who are using, you know, solar in particular or renewables. And so that seems to be an easy ask. And we're hoping that also that the increased use of smart meters, although Richard and I might not agree on the smart meter issue, is that will help facilitate making that an easier system.
Well, it's boring when everyone agrees on everything. But I will say, Kristen, it's important to remind our listeners again, August 6th is coming up. You mentioned a public hearing that the Public Service Commission are hosting. Two chances on that same day in Rochester, hosted in the City Council chambers. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the information session that'll be presented by RG&E starts at 1:30 with a 2:30 public statements. And then the evening session, the information session starts at 6 and public statements begin at 7. And we're really trying to push people to come out for these share their stories, and really, you know, the passion that people have around their experiences is something that really, although written comments are good, can't be captured as well. And so we're really trying to put the human face on this issue.
Can I just read an email from a listener who is sharing the kind of story that I've heard a number of times, though, again, I will preface this by saying I'm going to read this because I know people who've been in this situation and I know the frustration people have felt, but I also don't know how representative it is. And if we get a chance to talk to RG&E CEO or anyone else from the company in the future, we'll ask about this. But Rachel says, just wanted to say that many of us consider RG&E corrupt. I'm not sure if I know anyone who hasn't been scammed in some way. We were once billed $400, and after my husband spent hours on the phone with them, they finally admitted that we actually owed much less. They do this so that people will call in a reading. I can't help but feel outraged at how practices like this may affect more vulnerable citizens who might not have the time or stamina to figure out the situation. That's from Rachel in Rochester. Scott, is that fair?
That's fair. I mean, I actually had to file a complaint against RG&E a few years ago because they put a broken meter in my house and then charged me some exorbitant amount for the gas that they said I used. And you can go to the Public Service Commission and file a complaint with them against RG&E, and it works. I mean, it's not easy, but it took me a many hours, but I was able to get the charges drastically reduced.
Richard, is that the kind of thing we should be considering when we're looking at these kind of requests on the behalf of utilities to raise rates?
Well, I let me answer that in two pieces. The first one is that the Public Utility Law Project does direct services. We have a statewide hotline, 877-669-2572, where consumers call up with problems of their utilities and we help them for free, because that's why we're a not-for-profit. And as Scott pointed out, I mean, quite frequently we have to file formal complaints to the Public Service Commission, or we get in touch with the utility and then we push back on whatever the rationale is for the dispute with the consumer, and we help people on that basis. And I don't think it's necessarily corruption, but for example, you've heard of energy service companies. Those entities overcharge on a daily basis more than $1 million every day in New York State for people who are told, come with us and it'll be cheaper, and that turns out not to be correct. So we're always fighting against that kind of thing. Meters read improperly, sometimes water meters leak. But then a lot of times the company makes mistakes on estimated billing or on other sorts of things, and we get involved. And if we can help them immediately, we do. If we need to liaise with local civil legal services groups, we do that. And we file complaints on behalf of the citizens. And I should point out that one of our strong focuses in all rate cases is how is the company treating its customers? Because obviously we care about the most vulnerable customers, seniors, low income, the disabled, returning veterans, and we advocate for them in these kinds of rate cases, and quite frequently find out that that's a very necessary part to advocate strongly on in a rate case.
Angela writes to us to say, Evan, how come no one on your program is talking about the CEO's salary? I assume she means James Torgerson, who is the CEO of Avangrid, the parent company of RG&E and NYSEG, and his total compensation that I'm reading in various sources is about $5.7 million. Angela thinks that's a problem. Richard, is that a problem? Is that something that we should be looking at?
So, yeah, I mean, utility executives get paid an awful lot of money. And on average, what they will tell you is we have to do this to be comparable to other utilities in other states, otherwise we can't attract the right people. This is something that interveners haven't done a lot of work on in New York in about two decades, because there was a proceeding back 15 or so years ago, maybe a little longer, where the Public Service Commission essentially said, look, we're not going to inquire too deeply into the salaries of these folks as long as it's reasonable. And that I'll put that on the back of interveners like my own group. We haven't done enough work to find out whether those salaries are unreasonable. But if you look at the net result of a company's actions on the ground, if you have a company that's always getting blackouts and unable to restore, and their executives are getting increases or they're being paid disproportionately to other utilities, you got to wonder about that and bring that up again in the public statement hearing to the commission and in the rate case.
Guests in studio, Scott Oliver, Kristen Van Harwood, anything you want to say to Angela? Do you agree that we should be talking about that salary? Does it bother you?
To echo Richard, yeah, it's not something that we're looking at in general because of the past. But, you know, this kind of thing is, if you want to advocate, one of the most important things you can do is talk to, you know, your local representatives, your government officials, and have them advocate, because the public service is going to listen to them, too. So if you go to, you know, your local city officials, your local government officials, and tell them what your concerns are and ask those politicians to bring this up to the rate during the rate case, that could definitely, during public testimony, that could definitely help.
State senators, members of the state assembly, et cetera. Yeah. Kristen, how do you feel about that?
Personally, I would agree with Scott and Richard. And one of the things that we're, you know, some utilities have gone towards or moving towards that we're looking at as an option is what is known as performance-based regulation or performance-based types of incentives. And so we have some potential talking points on our webpage, but one of the things we're saying is, you know, you have to go green to make green, right? And so we're really saying, you know, you have to earn that money, right? That we want to hold people accountable for, you know, this is a public service. We do rely on them. The grid is very important, but this is also our dollars and how we want those dollars to be spent. And so, you know, advocating for pinning sort of incentive structures to their performance on things like reducing greenhouse gas emissions and improving energy efficiency and adapting clean heating and cooling technologies.
John writes to us to say, Evan, your guests are leftists who are jeopardizing economically viable energy supplies. It reminds me of the disastrous Cash for Clunkers program of the Obama administration. Kudos to Governor Cuomo for using common sense. All right, Kristen, you want to respond to that?
Well, that's probably not the first time I've been called a leftist, right? But I do actually see the sort of opportunity for economic development around green energy. And I know that there is a green jobs initiative in New York State. You know, these types of infrastructure upgrades and the sort of investment in technology development, this all requires, you know, smart minds and people to be put to work. So I think we can actually have a opportunity here to improve economic development, you know, by transitioning, by going green.
Scott, you want to respond to that email?
Well, I mean, the way that the energy sector in New York is set up, we're guaranteeing a company, Avangrid, a certain profit. Now, that's socialism, that straight up, you know, we're guaranteeing this publicly traded company a guaranteed profit of 9% every year to operate. So that's the way the system is. If they don't like that system of guaranteed profits for a private corporation, then they need to talk to their state representatives about how the system is set up.
It's corporate welfare, you see it as. Okay.
Yeah.
Richard?
Yeah, well, just looking at the map of New York, I'd say that Rochester is far to the left of Albany where I am. But answering you a little bit more seriously, I think it's important to focus on the larger question behind the caller's comment, which is there are virtually no jobs in New York State that depend upon the coal industry. There are virtually no jobs in New York State that depend upon large-scale fracking in the state of New York, although we do have more than 10,000 natural gas wells of the old variety here. There are a whole bunch of other jobs that are connected to fossil fuel industries, but in all reality, our future is brighter if we focus on growing a green economy in New York and exporting that knowledge and exporting our highly trained and well-paid workers to other states and other countries. I mean, the future for New York is not to focus on 19th century industries and jobs, but to focus on 21st century industries and jobs. And by the way, while we're making all those better jobs through the state and all of our individual focus on this kind of green energy and that kind of stuff, we're supporting the companies that are operating in New York, and we're also supporting the future of our children and our grandchildren. I mean, what's wrong with that?
All right, let me get Dorothy in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Dorothy.
Good afternoon. I have a couple things. One, regarding the rate increase. When they do the rate increase, why don't the other programs that assist people who are on a fixed income or have a minimal income, like the HEAT program, like I still work even though I receive Social Security, but I make $1 too much to receive HEAP. And then the other thing that I wanted to ask, do these alternative suppliers, is that really a savings for consumers? Because you still have to pay RG&E, you know, for delivery and et cetera, surcharges and whatever. So those are my comments and my questions, if your panel could address a couple of those.
Dorothy, thank you. Scott Oliver from Pathstone, you want to start?
Yeah, for the HEAP program, that's a separate program. That's a state-run program, so that's based on area median income. That's not really part of the rate case itself. There are things in the rate case as far as the outreach for low to moderate income families and such that do affect, you know, families in this area. And the other part is the ESCOs. There is a law in New York State that most people don't know about, that low-income families are not supposed to be using ESCOs. It's not well enforced, but, you know, if you think you are very close to the HEAP guidelines, you probably shouldn't be using an ESCO by law.
Richard Berkeley, you want to weigh in that too?
Sure. I'll start with the alternative suppliers. And again, I mean, our position is very simple, which is they add no value. They charge more than the utility. People who have affordability concerns, low income, fixed income, moderate income, the disabled should not take service from alternative suppliers. They do not save you money, period. Having said that, and we have been working for several years to get them prohibited from serving the residential market in the state of New York. The other side of that the caller's question was, what about things like HEAP? And so, as Scott said, HEAP is federal money. A state plan determines how to spend that money in New York. The state plan is usually put together sometime around between now and the middle of August, and so I suggest people reach out to OTDA, the state agency which creates the plan, and tell them if you have some concerns. There's a lot of talk about that yesterday in New York City at the Con Edison rate case. It's not a rate case issue, but it is an issue of affordability and survivability for people in New York State. We get 10% of all of the money in the United States for HEAP because we have a cold state and a lot of expensive energy. So HEAP is something that can be adjusted outside of the rate case, but inside the rate case, inside the utility service to your listeners, there is something called the low-income program, which Pulp and many other groups fought for years, and that is a discount to customers of the cost of energy to try and bring it down to only 6% of their income. This is still rolling out across the state of New York. It's been very effective so far, and probably in a year or two, we'll go back to the commission, ask them to restudy it, that is the Public Service Commission, and determine whether it's meeting the state's goals of trying to make energy affordable in New York and what needs to be done. So I have a lot of hope looking forward for that.
Richard, our hour has vanished. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us this hour.
Oh, my pleasure. Believe me, it's been fun.
Richard is the executive director of the Public Utility Law Project of New York. Kristen Van Harwagee is a member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. 30 seconds. What do you want to leave people with as we look ahead to August 6th and the Public Service Commission deciding on whether to allow this rate increase?
We want to tell them that we do not support the increase and do not support gas investment, and instead we think they should invest in beneficial electrification.
Okay, and the public hearings coming up August 6th in Rochester. Information on Rochester People's Climate Coalition website?
Yep, rockpcc.org.
rockpcc.org, and August 6th in City Council chambers there. A lot for the state to decide. And Scott Oliver, Deputy for Energy Programs for Pathstone Corporation. 20 seconds, final thoughts from you.
Go to the meeting and speak your mind.
Well, you didn't even need 20 seconds for that. Thank you, Scott, as always.
Yep.
And Kristen, thank you to you and RPCC. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. We will certainly be covering this proposal. And once again, our thanks to RG&E for sending a statement over. We do hope to talk to someone from RG&E. They're deferring to their CEO, who's not in town, so they couldn't be with us today. But perhaps sometime soon on the program, we'll keep working on that. More connections coming up.